All right, it is time for another episode of the Fits of State. I'm Jay Caruso, your co-host, along with my other co-host, Mr. Ben Howe. How are you?
Hi, good. My sniffles are gone.
All right, the sniffles are gone. The news gal, Andrea Ruth, is here as well.
Mm-hmm.
All right, how are you doing?
Pretty good, honey child.
Don't ever do that again.
Speaking of honey child, you know, remember the Jimi Hendrix song and the Stevie Ray Vaughan song Voodoo Child? So there was a PBS fundraiser one time where they were selling a DVD copy of Stevie Ray Vaughan at the Austin City Limits, and it's like he plays all these great songs like Mary Had a Little Lamb and Texas Flood, Voodoo Chili. Called it Voodoo Chili. All right.
Great way to start the show.
Yeah, in the news, lots
of premium content we got going.
I know. That's great. A lot of different stuff going on in the news. Buttigieg.
Just Mayor Pete. Just call him Mayor Pete. I give up.
I know how to say it. It's Buttigieg.
That's ridiculous.
Isn't that the right way to say it, Andrea? Buttigieg?
Yes, and I'm the one that taught you that, and the person that taught me that was a tweet from Jake Tapper.
Okay.
So thank you, Jake Tapper.
I'm going to declare this right now. His name is bullshit.
If
he introduced himself to me, I'd be like, fuck you. Tell me your real name. That's ridiculous.
I felt bad for David French, him and Alexander De Sanctis do the Order of Liberty podcast, and he must have pronounced it 15 different ways. He could not, for the life of him, say it the same way twice. He called him Buttigieg, Buttigieg, Buttigieg. Yeah. Bullshit, I think, is pretty good.
I think Mayor Pete or bullshit works for me.
Yeah, and you know, Mayor Pete, so this Mayor Pete thing, this guy is getting, like, you know, everybody's wondering, you know, like lavishing praise on all the money he's raised. So he's raising a lot of money because his profile's been raised by the media, who are just gushing over this guy. You know, he speaks different languages, and he was a Rhodes Scholar, and he was in the, you know, he was in the military, and he's gay, and he, you know, you know, so he finally, like, announced his candidacy. And one of the things that he did in his candidacy, when he was announcing his candidacy, was talking about, you know, all those jobs, like, in the Midwest, you know, the factory jobs, the ones that Trump promised that he would bring back, the ones that Democrats for years promised that they could bring back. And everybody's acting like he's this enlightened soul because he made the comment that, you know, hey, you know what, that's old. He goes, those jobs, basically he said those jobs are not coming back. And, you know, people are acting like, you know, he was the first one who ever said this.
Yeah.
Joe Scarborough. Well,
I'm so tired of this mentality. And I was tired of it during the Bush years and everything. Like, industry is going to decide what jobs are here.
Right.
Government needs to get out of the way of that happening. But government does not need to ensure that a specific type of job exists. Like, the consumers are going to decide what kind of jobs exist. Just shut up and get out of the way and stop promising to bring shit back.
Right, but he's not promising. He's saying we can't promise that. And everyone's treating it like it's this statement that came down from heaven because nobody has said it before, when conservatives, specifically conservative commentators, people like Kevin Williamson, have been talking about this for years. I mean, he was raked over the coals because he said these towns where these factories were that are never going to reopen, they're never going to be there, and people are still hanging around. He said that those kinds of places, they need to die. Basically, it's like people need to get out, let those areas die, and rebuild somewhere else. And of course, you know, he made it, you know, everyone made it seem like he was, you know, this elitist who was talking bad about the working class, and he wasn't. He's from the working class. The whole idea is that these jobs aren't coming back. But Mayor Pete didn't, like, this is nothing that he said was so profound, but they act like this guy said something and everybody just, like, faints.
Well, you know, Chris Christie used to do this all the time back when he was like a normal person.
Yeah.
He would say things that we all knew, and it was treated as, and I mean, I was excited. I was like, oh my God, somebody's saying it. And so, like, I get the idea that somebody says something that everybody was already thinking. It's like they had the balls to say it. And so that, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that's how I felt about Chris Christie anyway.
Yeah. He would say things like, you know, like the people who would sit there and accuse him of cutting education. He'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about. You know, he would just say that to a constituent.
I think my favorite thing with him was when he was running, who was he running against? I can't even remember now. Corzine.
Yeah.
And Corzine was like meeting with union leaders talking about how he supported them. And Christie was like, dude, it's our job to negotiate against these people. Like, this is supposed to be adversarial. You're not supposed to go in there and promise them that you're going to negotiate on their behalf against yourself.
Right.
And I remember just being like, God, thank you. Somebody's fine. Like, I loved Christie back then.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody lived long enough to become the bad guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, same thing happened with, you know, with Scott Walker, who, you know, Scott Walker did the same thing. He said, I'm not going to negotiate. He goes, it's ridiculous when, you know, when all the Democrats fled to Illinois, you know, when Walker said he was going to do away with collective bargaining, he said, I'm not going to bargain. He goes, you're not bargaining with the people who are giving you all the money to get you elected. He goes, you're not bargaining with them. You're basically owning them and saying you're going to do what we want.
Right.
And so he took that on, but he became the bad guy as well. And, you know, now.
Well, and it's always the same reason, which is why I'm so mad. I missed Scott Walker. That's why I'm so mad. I missed the Jay Cost conversation because it always comes down to the same thing, which is they have all these convictions until the party needs them. And then when the party needs them, and if the party's not in a great shape in terms of who's leading it, then they all have to just change their tune and support the party. And that's the reason I hate parties.
Well, the ironic thing about that is everybody who jumped upon the Trump train, who said he was going to do all these things that other Republicans wouldn't do, and basically he hasn't done the things that he said he was going to do, and is basically, you know, for the most part has governed like an average Republican would have governed. You know, they always make excuses for that. Well, you know, the establishment in Congress won't do anything for them.
Well, that's what's funny, too, is that they've completely, not to just turn this into a never Trumping bashing episode, but like, you know, what's funny to me is part of his pitch was that he was such a great leader and such a strong alpha male. That he was going to wrestle the establishment to the ground.
Right.
And then when he doesn't do that, they're like, well, it's the establishment. It's like, well, that was his whole point, wasn't it? Like, that's what he said the whole time, was that he was the only one who could do that.
Right.
So then when he doesn't do it, you go right back and say that it's their fault.
Yeah.
Then I guess he's weak.
Yeah. And the whole negotiating thing. I mean, I still remember that clip where he sits there and says, he goes, you got to get Democrats and Republicans in a room and you got to negotiate, but you got to come out with the deal that you want. And so, like, every time he gets blown up now on something, he just whines that the Democrats won't do anything for him. Or, you know, he goes back to blaming John McCain for not getting, you know, Obamacare over, you know, reversed.
Right.
So it's
which, you know, honestly, they should be thanking John McCain for preventing that from happening, because they didn't have anything in. It's not that I want like a Republican version of Obamacare.
Right.
But you can't just repeal it with how embedded it is into the law
right.
at this point. You can't just repeal it and then walk away and go, dude, we're done here, man. Like, yeah. And that seemed basically to be their plan. So they should, the amount of disasters that would have come out of that, I think it's probably best they didn't pull it off.
Yeah, well, it's one of those things. It's like any kind of, you know, what was it? It was Reagan who said the closest thing that you'll ever have to eternal life as a government agency. And so, and same thing with any kind of, like, you know, basically Obamacare is essentially, in a sense, almost an entitlement program. And it's like the moment that it got into the DNA of the entire government throughout the states and everything like that, you can't just like flip a switch and end it, you know, because it is going to cause a lot of, you know, there is going to be a lot of problems. You know, and of course, you know, I do think the Republicans deserve some blame for that, for the fact that they didn't have a concrete plan. There were some alternatives that they offered, some lighter versions and things of that nature, but they never really had something that said, this is what we propose that is in direct opposition to Obamacare, and this is why it's going to work better than Obamacare. And if they had done that, maybe sold that, it might have been a little bit easier. Instead, they tried to rush it when Trump came into office. And you know, of course, part of it was his fault. You know, he sits there and he has a celebration when the House passes the bill. And then 2 weeks later, he goes and bashes it and says, yeah, it's kind of mean. You know, maybe we can change some stuff in the Senate. And that, you know, it's kind of like, well, that was a good move. That was good going there, pal. Way to sell the country on the bill you're
selling. Well, what really gets me, by the way, is, and I complained about this on Twitter because it's just so annoying. They had the House, the Senate, the Supreme Court, and the presidency. And all the crap that they're now declaring emergencies over and all the things they're saying they want to run on, they're getting so gung-ho and certain about right when it's impossible for it to happen. So when it was possible to, you know, repeal Obamacare and create a better system or build a wall or any of those things, they half-assed it and made excuses the entire time, even though they had every single bit of power to do whatever they wanted. And now they're going into 2020 with the same 2016 rhetoric and saying, we're going to repeal Obamacare. And it's like, yeah, well, it's really easy to say that now that you know you can't, because it's never going to get through the House since you lost it.
Right. And Trump signaled that by saying, hey, after the election, we're going to do it. You'll see. You'll see. Yeah. And here's the scary thing. And Jonathan Last talked about this today in an article he wrote for The Bulwark. I don't know if some people are even allowed to mention that. But, you know, and I shouldn't even mention his name on there. He's like, he blocks me on Twitter for some reason. But whatever. Anyway. Who? Huh?
Who does?
Jonathan Last.
He blocked you on Twitter?
Yeah.
Why?
He blocked me after... Okay, so he was on The Remnant. And I can't even remember exactly what it was now. It was like Jonah had said something, and he said... And like Jonah was talking, so I was listening to the podcast on my phone. I got a phone call, so the podcast stopped. And then the phone call hung up, and all of a sudden the podcast restarted, and Jonah was like, and that's just bullshit. You know, it was like, so they usually bleep out the curse words that they have on their show. And I was like, so I tweeted that and I said, you know, listening to Remnant with Jonah and JV Last, blah, blah, blah. And it comes back and this is bullshit, you know. And whether he thought maybe I was being like a, you know, a Nancy boy or something like that, was so offended that, you know, somebody was cursing on the show. I don't know what it was, but I mean, that's right after that, he blocked me.
Hmm. I'll put a good word in for you.
He probably hates me anyway because I work for the Washington Examiner.
Oh, well, fair point.
For obvious reasons. But, you know, anyway.
Well, at least the entire movement is totally splintered.
Yeah. But, I mean, he did. Okay, so getting back to what he said, he basically was talking about the BS binary choice nonsense. You know, his argument was one area I don't really like kind of looking back, you know, whatever happened, stop worrying about it. It's like, you know, they say, well, if Bernie wins in 2020 and has a full Democratic Congress to do whatever the hell he wants, at least for 2 years, would you look back on the Trump presidency and say it was worth it? Would it have been better? Would it have been better if Hillary would have won and then, you know, another Republican could have won in 2020? Or would it have been better for Obama to have lost in 2012, the Democrats who don't necessarily want a Bernie Sanders as the presidential nominee.
Right, they've got their own little never Sanders thing going on.
Oh, yeah, especially coming from the Hillary people. It's pretty funny. They do not like him.
I just can't figure out, like, are they going to be, you know, obviously Never Trump was not successful.
Right.
So what do you think? You think the Democrats are more likely to be able to pull off something like that?
I don't know. I mean, they have so many, you know, it could be, you know, it may have to be Biden or somebody or, you know, and somebody wrote a piece today about Buttigieg saying he's going for the hope and change voters. You know, that he's a progressive. I mean, let's face it. He called Obamacare a conservative. He called it conservative legislation.
Right.
And he's another one that's out there bashing the Electoral College, and he is out there making sure that he turns Mike Pence into an enemy, even though Mike Pence hasn't said a word about him. I think Mike Pence...
I just still think that the same people that we thought at the very beginning are going to be the ones that that are the real competitors by the time the primaries are over. Like, we've said it's Kamala Harris, we've said right. it's Biden, you know, like, this is pretty common. I think Trump is an outlier in terms of how primaries normally go. You know, normally a Trump-type candidate who is more refreshing to the base or whatever you want to call it will come in, or Herman Cain did it, you know, in 2012.
Right.
And, you know, it happens over and over, and then eventually that wears off. Newt Gingrich was that for a little bit. And then, you know, the more establishment-y candidate ends up getting the nomination.
Right.
And I think Trump can't be the example. Like, it's an abnormal situation with Trump.
Yeah.
It's going to go the way it normally goes.
Right. But this is also a situation, though, where you have 14 or 15, you know, candidates in the race. Now, I think that gets whittled down to probably 5 or 6 by the time the Iowa caucuses come around. You know, Kirsten Gillibrand couldn't even, the latest poll had her at 0%. I mean, John Delaney was polling higher than her. Mm-hmm. And I think all those kinds of also rans are going to be off the thing. Cory Booker is not gaining any traction. He'll be done. I think Elizabeth Warren, I think her best bet, it would have been to try to make a run in 2016, but she didn't. I don't think that she's there. I think Kamala Harris has probably kind of taken her thunder away.
I think so, for sure.
Yeah.
And honestly, like, you know, a few years ago, the claims of Native American heritage and stuff was kind of a joke to the left. And now they're also calling her out on that. I mean, to a degree.
Right.
They're at least saying she mishandled it.
Right.
And anytime they're willing, the uber progressive left who used to think of her as she persisted in all this stuff, if they're willing to, like, call her out, even on something that might be considered relatively small, it's a sign that she doesn't have the strength she used to have.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And I don't, you know, Buttigieg, believe it or not, is going to start facing some more scrutiny. The more his profile is raised, the more people are going to start digging into his job, you know, the job that he did as mayor, because right now the he's had the microphone, so he can just pretty much say, well, I've done this, 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 and this, and people are going to start looking. And, you know, there's African Americans who are not happy with how he ran certain aspects of the city when it came to, like, tearing down homes that were, you know, in violation of code, kind of like they did in Detroit, you know. But he apparently, there were African Americans who said he didn't give them enough time. You know, he you know, it was like, basically it was like, you do it by this time or it's done and we're taking it over and we're going to knock it down. And there's other areas as well, crime and jobs and everything like that. I think he's been able to blow up his record,
like,
a little bit more than others
have. Right now. Like, I just can't picture it staying.
Right.
He doesn't even have, like, Sanders, I think, is much more of a threat to the establishment candidates. That's only going to change. Sanders is only going to, that situation is only going to change if the majority of Democrats, like, if a movement similar to Never Trump was to take over. But don't you think that they're going to run into a little more trouble trying to do the shenanigans they did with the superdelegates and kind of pushing Sanders out? Like, they can't do that now. It's not,
no, they changed the rules.
Isn't there?
Yeah.
They're not as addicted to one particular candidate whose turn it is and whatnot. I just think, you know, if Sanders was going to make it, this would be the election where he would.
Well, look at it this way. Democrats have basically written off Fox, like they won't do debates on Fox. But Bernie Sanders said, yeah, I'll go on Fox. I'll do a town hall with Bret Baier and I forgot who the other one was with him that was asking questions.
That was smart. There are Democrats who are mad at him, but that was smart.
2.5 million viewers.
Yeah.
So
I don't know how they don't see that.
I thought that was a dumb move. I thought it was a dumb move not to do it. I thought it was a smart move by Sanders to kind of do that, because basically he's going to get more people that are interested in him watching him on Fox News. I mean, it's not, you know, you probably have a lot of Fox News viewers too who are probably just sitting there guffawing and laughing the entire time.
Yeah, but it gives him an opportunity to appeal to the base by owning people on Fox News.
Exactly. And, like, exactly. And that's the way they would view it.
He doesn't get those opportunities on CNN, MSNBC.
No, I totally agree. I think it was a brilliant political move on his part to do that. And I think that you're going to see that. I mean, he has run a campaign, you know, through almost to the end, he's going to be a little bit more shrewd this time. He's also got a donor base that's very big. He's got the infrastructure that's going to be there. He's going to be very difficult
to beat.
Not
to mention he's a millionaire.
He is part of the 1% now. Bernie, the 1%.
I do still think that it is a condescension type of thing. I will never forget the morning after the 2016 election. I was staying in Manhattan because I was doing a thing for BuzzFeed in the decision desk that night, the night before the election night. The next morning at like 8 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock in the morning, it was super early. They were, you know, still doing the reaction to the 2016 election where Trump had won. I don't think Hillary had conceded at that point, but everybody saw the writing on the wall. And the first thing, I can't remember if I was watching MSNBC or CNN, but the first thing that the guy that they asked said was, well, I don't think that voters, it was someone from the Democratic Party. And he said, I don't think that the voters realize that we are, you know, for the working class, that we're on their side. There was no blame on Democrats or Hillary Clinton. It was the voters' fault that they don't understand who the Democrats are, that the Democrats are actually the ones out there rooting for them, and that they should know all of this. But they're so dumb, they can't figure it out, and so they voted for Donald Trump. And I think that this no going on Fox News is a extrapolation out of that. It's just 3 years later.
Yeah, no, well, I also think there's going to be some, I think there's going to be some backlash to these Hillary people who are going out there now pretty openly saying, we don't need Bernie Sanders. We need somebody else who can, quote unquote, beat Trump. Here's the thing.
Amazing. It's like all the same rhetoric for the Republicans in 2006, needing somebody who could beat Hillary. Like, it's the same thing.
Well, and the funny thing is, though, I think somebody was tweeting about this the other day saying you've got these 15, you know, you got 15 to 16 candidates and you have the kookiest person like kind of out leading. He goes, you remember how this ended in 2016, right?
If it does end up being Sanders, and if Sanders ends up winning, I am never going to leave the Trumpkins alone, ever. I mean, it is their fault. There's no getting around that. Do you really think Sanders would stand a chance if he wasn't running against Trump? Like, I understand that Trump won last time and blah, blah, blah. I'm not suggesting that he's, like, you know, so easy to beat or anything like that. But I am saying that, you know, everything, what is it, every action has an equal reaction, and people are searching for something polar opposite to Trump.
Go ahead, Andrew.
I was just going to say, what's amazing on policy side, though, is that there are, I mean, Nancy Pelosi has begun to really push back on the whole idea that she said that she believes in capitalism. Democrats believe in capitalism. I mean, she kind of sees, I think, a bit the writing on the wall. And, you know, Jay, like you always said, like, Nancy Pelosi knows how to get people to vote the right way. And she is coming out there. She's mocked recently in interviews, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, I cannot say her name, saying that she's from a district that, a glass of water with a D next to it would win in her district. I mean, she kind of said, oh, well, that's only five people that are kind of running to the far, far hard left, but they get so much airplay. And those are not the people. They may make a big splash on Twitter. I don't think, now Donald Trump made a big splash on Twitter and ultimately got the nomination. I don't know that that translates to Democrats and a far left progressive socialist agenda.
It really just depends. It depends on
who's delivering the message.
Well, it also depends on, I mean, you know, there's more to what Trump was able to do than just that he appealed to people like through social media. It was a combination of things. Number one was the debates, because you remember how well Newt was doing when he was the no, you know, didn't hold punches and whatnot,
right,
in the debates. And then in conjunction with that, of course, was the social media. But also there was a pretty clever ground game. It was more like he was going to certain influential leaders and pushing on them and befriending them and making promises to them all through the primaries to help gather the right surrogates to make the case that Trump could be voted for and that he could win against Hillary. Like, there was a lot happening that continued to elevate him throughout the primaries. I don't know that there's any candidate on the left that has that ability. He's a good salesman.
No, and like, well, and well, what he did too is he found it's amazing that a person of such wealth who has no idea how a factory worker in Michigan lives could tap into a this kind of thing where it's like, yeah, he's rich, but he's looking out for us. You know, it's like he doesn't need anybody's money, so he can sit there and, you know, like there was, you know, many people on the left want to refer to it as racism, and many people on the right want to sit there and just kind of, you know, blow those people off as nothing but a bunch of yokels. But when you look at the numbers, the exit polls, it was 8 or 9% of the people who voted for Trump voted for Obama in 2012 and 2008. So these are not people that are ideologically driven. They are at a point, however, where they're saying, look, I see the government doing stuff for this person, doing stuff for that person, doing stuff overseas, doing stuff here. Meanwhile, I can't get a good paying job. I don't have health care. You know, I'm living, you know, in a dying town, et cetera. And I think that spoke very well, you know, with Trump, who made these promises. Of course, you know, he was lying to them by saying he'd bring these jobs back. And unfortunately, you know, that is going to be something that somebody like Biden could hit on, you know, because he could sit there and say, this guy told you he was going to bring your jobs back. He didn't bring your jobs back. Didn't happen. Yeah, the unemployment rate is low, but we're still having these issues because of this. What's going to be interesting is to watch somebody like Biden push back on the idea of tariffs and push, you know, trade and situations like that, saying Trump is hurting you more than he's helping you. If Biden ever decides to get into the race, I mean, he's, you know, I don't know what the hell is he waiting for?
He's made some missteps though already, because he had the opportunity to be like, remember how great it was under Obama?
Yeah.
Like he had the opportunity to bring the Obama era forward for Democrats. And I think that would have appealed to a bunch of them, even the ones who would have held out.
Right.
And wanted other people to win. They wouldn't have been super duper upset if he won the nomination. And they would have been happy to support him, in my opinion, and especially when they got to see their, you know, they love Obama. So, you know, seeing him back out on a campaign trail and everything would have gotten the base energized and so on. And I think he bought into the idea, the social media idea, that he has to appeal to the rage mobs.
Oh,
and,
I know.
You know, he started doing the same kind of, waffling and apology tour type stuff that other people do. And I'm like, dude, no, stop.
We had a piece in the Washington Examiner today where they were talking about, you know, one of the problems that Biden is going to have is that he's been nice to Republicans in the past. And so there was five times that he was nice to Republicans. I said, that is the state of our politics today, where it's a problem for Joe Biden that he wasn't an asshole.
But this is what he doesn't seem to get, and I don't understand why he doesn't get it. That's a problem for him for now. But if he was to get the nomination, or if he was to be leading in the polls or whatever, and if people started to see him as the most realistic option, the nature of tribalism is that they will quiet their concerns. They won't be saying that shit anymore. They're saying it now because they have different candidates they want to be leading.
Right.
But the moment he becomes the most realistic, because we just saw that happen with Trump, and it happens every freaking election. You know, everybody in 2012, you know, there was basically never Romney. And everybody never was like, there's no way. He's not a real Republican, you know. And then at some point, they were just like, I mean, honestly, I think Romney's going to be the greatest president in the history of the United States. I mean, like, it goes every time it goes that way.
Well, it usually does. I mean, it happened, you know, and Republicans weren't thrilled about Bob Dole in 1996. And they, you know, in 2008, nobody was thrilled about John McCain. You know, he brought on Sarah Palin.
We had Rush Limbaugh preaching about how brilliant McCain was in 2008.
I know. And you had Romney. He would sit there and say, he's not a conservative, folks. He's not a conservative. And then when he got the nomination, it was all there. I think Trump was the was the straw that broke the camel's back. There was finally some people that said, no, I'm not doing it. I'm just not doing it.
Yeah, Trump is the one where they did the same thing they always do, and we were like, wait, no, really? Like, you're telling me there's actually no standard? We thought maybe you guys were like, you know. I always thought that their criticism was a little overplayed, but that they really did support the candidate, and it turns out it's the other way around.
Yeah.
Like, the criticism was real, but they stopped giving a shit once it got to the general election.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. All right, so we're about 30 minutes in. Just want to take a little break to remind all of you, if you like what you're listening to, like the show, we'll have stuff in the show notes, links, so that you can, sign up to automatically get the podcast every week, when a new issue drops. And also, I spoke about this. I think it was funny last week. I spoke about it for what I said was like 4 or 5 minutes, and it was actually like 8 or 9 minutes. And that is the premium content that we're offering now. We had Jake Haas on the show last week, and then he hung around for about, we thought maybe for 15 minutes. He was actually there for about a half hour talking about the 2020 election and who he's going to vote for. And I'm telling you, there are some things that he had to say about Never Trump people and Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump that actually surprised me. I know I was kind of like, wow.
And his former coworkers.
And his former coworkers at the Weekly Standard. Things about that kind of like, or you know, were like, wow. It was kind of like, okay. So if you go to fifthestate.supportingcast.fm, we promise we're going to have more of this stuff. But if you sign up, it's only $3.99 a month. And you won't have to like go to the website and listen to it. You'll be able to just kind of get a separate feed that you'll be able to pull into your podcast app and listen to it every week. So check that out at fifthestate.supportingcast.fm. We'll put a link to that as well in there. Okay, so what else happened? What else happened this week?
Notre Dame burned.
Yeah, Notre Dame, the cathedral in Paris. Burned down. I mean, Twitter, it was like one of those things where it was an event where everything that I saw on Twitter yesterday pretty much revolved around that fire.
Mm-hmm. And there was a fair amount of, like, there's this new, the outrage has been happening for so long now that it's created counter outrage. I don't know if you'd call them mobs, but you know, you've got people who theorize and speculate too early. and then you've got people that are outraged that people are theorizing and speculating too early. And those people just battle all day when anything happens.
Yeah.
And the same thing, there were several people, and I know I saw Andrea say something to one of them because, you know, it's one of the problems with speculating is all it has to be is possible, and then that's somehow worth saying. You know, like, to me, it's like, you know, somebody could say, well, it's maybe the caliphate. Okay. Maybe it's a comet. You know, like, there's a ton of explanations, and as evidence comes out, we'll find out for sure.
Yeah.
Why does everything have to happen at the speed of social media now?
No, I know. To what you're saying, I remember, and I'm an old Law & Order geek fan, and so there was an episode of Law & Order where a defense attorney was cross-examining a medical examiner, and he's like, isn't it possible that pneumonia killed her? And the doctor's like, it's possible that death rays from Mars killed her. He goes, but I doubt it. You know, it's like the most elaborate, you know, it's kind of like that thing. You're hunting zebras when you hear hoofbeats and you think you're hunting, you're on a zebra hunt when it's really just a horse. Like, usually it's the most obvious and simple explanation for something happening that reason happened. And apparently the workers who were doing the fire was set accidentally by the guys who were doing the renovations or something to that effect. That's what people think.
This is the worst part about that kind of speculation. Is that kind of speculation, once out there and once people are defending it, then when the explanation comes out that actually has nothing to do with what was speculated about, now they don't believe it. You know, now they're like, oh, right. I'm sure it was just the workers. I told you, if it was Muslims, they'd never tell anyone. I mean, like, it becomes Area 51 all of a sudden.
Right.
And that's the nature of, or Roswell, rather. But like that's the nature of these of conspiracy theories. Like I've said this before, One of the reasons the conspiracy theories are so attractive to people is because it's not hard to make them sound like they make sense.
Right.
Like, all you have to do is leave out certain bits of information, and then it makes sense. And then once you have all the information and it still looks like it's pointing in the other direction, these conspiracy theorists, who often start with speculation, they fall back on cover-up.
Right.
You know, then it's just
it allows for that.
Right. And that, and I think that, and you know, I've said this a lot, like on social media, and I think on my, the other podcasts that I do, but I grew up with a dad who very much has been a Alex Jones fan since the early 2000s and was a Ron Paul newsletter recipient during the 90s. So I grew up in a house where, or not, I mean, I didn't live with my dad. No, that was kind of the funny thing. My dad, until I was an adult, I didn't know that he was a racist or anything like that. I had no clue until I was about 19, 20 years old. And then it's been 16 years of like, wow, this guy, you know, I mean, I love my dad, but he's, you know, got some wild ideas. But I always say my dad, he has never come across a conspiracy theory he didn't believe. And it very much starts out as someone just merely saying, I don't really know, but I don't see how a fire this big can just be started by, you know, accident by a few workers. That right there, and that's what I responded to yesterday that Ben was talking about, that right there is the start. Alex Jones didn't start out by, you know, like believing in gay frogs, you know, there's a buildup. And I see this like very beginning parts of just even throwing these things out there immediately instead of sitting back and holding back and waiting. And yeah, you're right. It's always if there's no proof, well, then it's a cover up. Trust me, I've lived through this. I would tell my dad, that's absolutely not true. Steel, you know, like, fire can melt steel, and right. You know.
The melting steel thing always cracks me up because they're not differentiating between melting and liquefying.
Right.
Like, you know, yeah, it can't liquefy, but if you think it can't weaken steel enough to cause the building to collapse, you're an idiot. But then the other thing, I'll throw some compassion at these conspiracy theorists because I do see a common theme. And I've even felt the temptation many times. It's often fear. Like, you don't want to believe in the randomness of certain things. And so you try to figure out, these conspiracy theorists, they try to figure out a way to make it, like, not random. I remember when Nick Berg got his head cut off in Iraq in, like, 2004, I think.
Right.
And so I found out about it, and I watched the video, which was traumatic, and I read all about it, and there was all this stuff that I was piecing together about it. He had a Quran and all these other things, and I was like, oh, you know, maybe this is like staged. I mean, he died, but as a martyr, and he was actually working with them. You know, there was a part inside me that didn't want to believe that some dude who went over there to do contract work literally got his head sawed off and he wasn't in on it, because that's terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the World Trade Centers and everything else, people don't want to believe they're just going to go into work and their plane's going to fly in the building. They want to believe that there's a series of events that could have been prevented.
Right. Well, they start with a conclusion and then work their way backward. You know, sit there.
So when you talk about like Notre Dame, it's easier for somebody to believe the caliphate did this.
Right.
Because if they believe that, there's something that can be stopped. But if it's literally just random, some dude had an accident and now this, you know, treasure of Western civilization is
which, thank God, no one died or was seriously hurt.
But like, I think people, they don't want to believe that it's that random because they want to feel like they have more control than that. And that's why they believe in conspiracy theories, is they're just afraid.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I saw some articles or whatever, or some people saying that it was happening, where people were saying that, you know, God did this to punish Catholics, you know, for the molestation and stuff like that. And it's like at the same time, it's like, okay, if you want to go to like, you know, God did this, it's like, you know, especially like during Holy Week and things like that. And it's like, okay, well, why couldn't you say, God just got tons more people to pray yesterday watching, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, well, I don't understand why people the whole God's will thing always kind of cracks me up. It's all God's will. Like, what are you talking about? You know, everything is part of God's plans. So if you're a Christian, that's what you believe. So when people are saying, well, I think God did this, because I'm already like, shut up. Just stop telling me why God did it. We already know that God's involved because he, according to the beliefs you say you have, controls the entire universe. So stop picking things and then trying to identify like God's motive. And I also love the idea that there's this petty God up there that's just like, you know, going, well, screw them.
Yeah. My favorite. Yeah, my favorite is that, you know, you could actually sit there and have the audacity to think that you could think on God's level. Well, I'm pretty sure God did this for this reason. Oh, really? You had a chat with him about this and he went over it with you while you're at Starbucks.
Just like Trump.
You know, I always say, you know, my two mottos in life is one, panic first. And the other one is everything always works out the way that it's supposed to. And sometimes it's not the way that we want things or how we want things, but it's how we react to them, and that things, and you have to adjust, and then things work out into a new normal. Just no matter how tragic the circumstances are, and you're sitting there saying like, why is this happening? But everything works out.
Back up. Why panic first? I am curious about that.
Oh, it just generally, you know, freaks Jay out first, and you know, kind of it's just the
let panic. Me say to our listening audience, I do not recommend that you panic first.
no, you don't recommend. She's not doing it as a recommendation. She is saying that's her like philosophy is panic first and then things will work out. I mean, that's her thing.
That always works out in disasters, by the way.
It's usually only about, you know, a minute or two, and then I calm down, and then we start thinking rationally. But the panic always comes first.
Yeah, and so before we go on to the next subject here.
This will work great when you're driving, by the way.
The one thing I want to say to somebody, I saw so many of these tweets where people are like, it's so terrible to see people saying such awful things in this face. You know what? Something awful like that happens. How about this? Turn off Twitter. Put down your phone. Don't put on Fox News or CNN or anything like that. Put on like C-SPAN or something if they're going to be showing an event like that, which they probably did, or some other kind of news station where it's not people aren't going to be commentating. There's not going to be any kind of like political shit that's going to be thrown your way. Stop sitting there whining and blubbering about all the terrible things. You're sitting there looking at it. You have the option of turning it off and saying, because social media is going to do that. There's going to be people that are going to say stupid things. It happens every single time.
By the way, one of them was the president. And let me say, you know, in regards to that, it wasn't a big deal. And this is the most amazing part of the Notre Dame situation from my Twitter experience. It wasn't a big deal because he didn't say like the French are stupid for not shipping in the water. He just spoke sort of like a regular tweeter. You know what I mean?
Right.
He was just like, can they ship in water? Like, and I didn't have an enormous problem with him saying that.
No, I didn't. And
then somebody, a journalist quote tweeted him, and very like rationally and normally, not in like a Trump's an idiot way. He had apparently gotten a statement from the French firefighters that was saying why they didn't do that.
Right.
And it was a really normal explanation. I retweeted it. That was the only thing I had said about it. Some Trumpkin comes in and he starts saying that the French firefighters are idiots and that anybody should know that this is the way, and encloses a picture of a helicopter dumping water on a forest in California. Somebody else comes in and replies to him, somebody from France. They correct him and say, you know, that's great for forest fires, but not, you know, ancient architecture where it would have caused the building to collapse in on itself.
Right.
And this guy's arguing back and forth over and over, like he just would not accept that Trump's suggestion was wrong. Like he couldn't even accept that his suggestion.
And did he make a suggestion, or was it even like more like a question? Like, how come they're not doing this?
It was like a you know, when you're throwing out ideas.
Right.
Is how it seemed to me. It didn't seem like he was saying, I know better.
Yeah. No, I know.
Like he was just saying, like, you know, hey, can you do this?
Well,
this,
you know,
I could not accept that the French firefighters are right because Trump said that.
If you think about how Trump does his day and watches TV, and somebody snarked, you know, if you don't think, you know, if you had any doubt that Trump doesn't sit around watching cable news TV all day, that being said, Trump does see a lot of news TV. And when the wildfires and things like that are going off, that is what they're doing. So you kind of just, I mean, yeah, I'm not sitting here, you know, being a Trump apologist for his tweet, because I don't care. I could not care less about that tweet. But when he's sitting there and you do see, you know, wildfires, they're dumping water, dumping fire retardants.
Yeah, that's not what's amazing to me. What's amazing to me is that this guy couldn't
accept that it was wrong. Yeah.
That it was like because, you know, I know I say this all the time, but it's just, it's not about Trump anymore. It's about these insane supporters.
Yeah.
Except that anything he said isn't in gold, you know, it's got to be true. And he referred to me retweeting that normal statement as me mocking the president, mocking the president.
Yeah. Well, you're not, I mean, and I criticize Trump all the time. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter what he says. It doesn't matter how off the wall it is. They are just as bad, if not worse, than the Obama bots who would just defend everything that he said.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And this is the perfect example of why it's not Trump to me anymore, is I don't really feel like Trump did anything wrong in that scenario.
No, I don't think he did either.
And so now, like, you know, it sounds like to the brain dead, you know, Trump cultists that I'm complaining about Trump right now. I'm not complaining about Trump. I'm complaining about you because you're an idiot.
I mean, in an overall sense, it'd be better if Trump sometimes just didn't say anything, you know, just don't say anything or say something to the effect that, you know, oh, I'm watching this and it's terrible and blah, 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 you know. But even if you sit there and say, okay, maybe he shouldn't have said anything about the fire. You're right. He didn't sit there and say, boy, the French are really stupid. Why don't they just take the thing right. And go to water and be done with it, you know?
Well, I will say that while I'm saying Trump didn't do anything wrong, I will also say that had he said the French were idiots, I wouldn't have been surprised. So, like, while I will say that my biggest problem these days is with the Trump supporters, that's only because I know who Trump is and I always have known who Trump is. And so it's no longer a question of my distaste for things he does.
Right.
That's known. And not really changeable. It's the people. It's the supporters. They're nuts. They're just nuts.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you are talking about. It doesn't matter. It's always going to be you're wrong. Trump did it for this and this is the reason why and blah 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 blah.
Right. And the thing is, they would have been this way, I think, I theorize, that they would have been this way about other presidents. But other presidents have enough restraint and diplomacy and so on that they don't need to do it all the time.
Right.
Well,
they
so
would,
it's just
yeah,
like
I mean,
not
if,
as obvious.
Yeah, if Ted Cruz was president or Marco Rubio, you know, there wouldn't, you know, he would be annoying the left more. Marco Rubio would be annoying the left more with his biblical quotes every morning. Oh, you're tweeting this and all that. You're starving children.
While people
and, you
are
know.
Dying in schools from global warming.
Yes. You know. It would have been normal. So, all right. How about we go to the news with Andrea Ruth?
Yes. Well, we have two fairly lighthearted things just because they amused me, and I want and I guess I'll start with the first one because it's more of a question for you guys that kind of this blew up Twitter and Instagram last week where Kirsten Cavallari from she used to be I think on The Hills back in the day. She is I think she's the partner to Jay Cutler. Not sure. If they're married or not, but she's, you know, got multiple children and she's on this show where she's sitting around talking to her friends and it's a reality show. She's sitting around talking to her friends and she says that when she was breastfeeding, her ducks became the ducks in her breasts became clogged. And she said that, and this lit up Instagram and Twitter and everywhere that Jay Cutler, who is a former football player,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. he sucked her nipple so hard that it got rid of the blockages, and everybody kind of flipped out. Or either I'm sure that there's people that support. I mean, it's you know what people do. It's like it's fine, but what I was just kind of like saying, like as two guys with kids, like did this ever? Would you ever do this to help a woman out? Because then she replied. She actually followed it up and said, look, if you've never been a mom and you've never breastfed and you've never had your mammary ducts clogged, then you can't say anything. So nope. She did follow it up.
Nope. There are these things called pumps.
And or here's the here you go, dear. Here's the formula.
Right.
Yeah, and there are, you know, there's
I've seen, yeah, I know what engorged is, and I know what, you know, I know all the stuff. I've got four kids, like, I know all of these things, but my participation in fixing those things did not involve any part of my body.
And here's the thing, this is one of those things where it's like, guess what? I know you're basically just a reality TV person. But you don't need to broadcast every freaking thing about your life to the public. Right. Some of this stuff I'm just not interested in.
She just thought it was normal. Like, she just thought, like, what? This is what everybody does, right?
Yeah. No, it's not.
I don't even know what
does.
Breast milk tastes like. And I was around it a year at a time, four times. You know?
Yeah, it's just, ugh. Andrew, why do you even bring this up?
I don't know, because I was amused.
Now the world knows that I don't know what breast milk tastes like. So
somebody's gonna get your address and like mail you some or something like that.
Yeah, I'm sure it needs to be a cuck somehow. I don't know, but he ain't even had no breast milk.
I think people should. I think you should be able to, you know, like talk about whatever you want to and stuff like that. But yeah, there is kind of like this persistent, I don't know if you want to call it like a stigma. I'm sure there's plenty of people that feel it's a stigma and that it's, you know, kind of like.
Right. Stigma is always used.
Yeah. I'm trying to
prevent people, like they want to pretend like we have a problem with the things they're doing just because we don't want to be involved in. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I'm not, you can do whatever you want. I'm not getting on your case about it. If you want to breastfeed in public, you go ahead. I just have nothing to do with it.
And you don't need to tell me about it.
Yeah, like
I don't need to know about it.
Well, but she wasn't telling you. Don't watch the show. It's just that it got like we said, it's the nature of social media, right? It blew up because it was so kind of, I guess,
gross.
It was the way that she, I guess it was probably the way that she, you know, said it. Like it was, he sucked so hard, you know. Like,
yeah, well, he did. You know, it's funny because you could sit there and say there's a parallel between sucking so hard and his career, which basically sucked so hard.
The worst part for me is just that knowing what a woman, how much pain a woman is in when that sort of thing is happening, and that he had to suck so hard, as she says, like, this is the most nightmarish image I have in, I mean, her screaming and him sucking for dear life on her chest. Like, it if somebody walked in at that moment, they
were the
like,
other, I mean,
it's like a freaking death cult. What's going on in here?
Yeah. And don't they have like other kids and stuff? I mean, you know, it's like,
yeah, there's three.
There's three. So yeah, they're probably, what the hell is she doing to mommy?
Sucking the life out of your mom's boob in the middle of the family room.
And all right.
I think
now Ben and I are having too much fun with this. So.
Well, yeah,
Andrea's ready to move on.
Is there something like unnatural about using a pump? I just don't understand.
Maybe it didn't have enough suction.
Yeah. Well, if that's true, then he's doing things on the side that she doesn't know about.
I mean, you know, get a vacuum cleaner or something. Try that out if the pump doesn't work. But you know, you're right. If Cutler was able to do it on his own, maybe maybe you want to take a look at his. Go take a look at his social media.
All right.
Okay. Next. So then, speaking of, we're going to stick with our social media theme.
Oh, we're not going to stick with sucking the life out of boobs?
No, okay. No. But so the Netflix film account, which is a verified.
Content, by the way, I just want to say that, but go ahead.
Huh?
I said, this is the kind of stuff they'll get in premium content. I'm just
saying. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So the Netflix film account, which is a verified Netflix account, they decided to get all woke on everyone and said yesterday, tweeted, quick PSA, can we stop calling films chick flicks unless the films are literally about small baby chickens? Here's why this phrase should absolutely be retired. Thread. And they went on to tweet another, I think, four or five, I think it was a total thread of six tweets, but it ends with, overall, there's nothing inherently gendered about liking a lighthearted film with a strong female lead and emotional arc. So the next time you call something a chick flick, you better be referring to Chicken Run. And it talks about sweeping categories and that chick flicks are traditionally synonymous with romantic comedies. This suggests that women are the only people interested in one, romance, two, comedy, which I can promise from the men I've come across in my life simply isn't true. And it was, I mean, I don't understand why this account had to go there. Of course, there were.
Oh, that's a ballsy move on a month where they raised the price and Disney Plus was announced.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I mean, like, are they just saying, we all know you're leaving, so we're going to be assholes till you're gone?
Yeah, so one of our favorite conservatives out there, especially on dog Twitter, Jonah Goldberg quote tweeted it yesterday and said, reassign this intern. Oh, no, it was this morning. Said, reassign this intern as a joke, right? And then Brittany Van Horn, who claims she is a comedy writer, replied to him with, Netflix has one of the most successful corporate social media presences of all time, but sure, condescend this person by calling them an intern because you personally don't like this thread that garnered a ton of engagement and obviously resonated with people.
Garnered a ton of engagement is now you know, you can get ratioed to hell and that counts as a hell of a lot of engagement.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't mean anything. Getting a lot of engagement isn't necessarily good. No. Most of what I saw was mockery. I just quote tweeted it and said no. And I say this as a fan of several, like, quote unquote, chick flicks, if that's where you want to go. You know, it's like, you know, when you talk about, you know, When Harry Met Sally you know, what's the other one? You've Got Mail.
Now anyway, isn't it? I mean, most people say rom-com.
Yeah, most people say, you know, most people don't call romantic comedies chick flicks. A chick flick is, say, something like Beaches.
Steel Magnolias.
Exactly,
yeah.
Those are movies
those are chick flicks. Literally designed and marketed.
They're designed
and
marketed
chicks.
Towards women, exactly.
The entire Lifetime Movie Network.
Yeah.
Right.
And if you notice, the Lifetime Movie Network is always about some terrible man. You know, it's like, he beat me to death. You know, it's those kinds of movie titles. You know, he raped my daughter.
We need to start a men's right movement.
You know, which is funny, Jay, because you mentioned two Nora Ephron movies, and
you only
mentioned one Nora Ephron movie, and then the other one is a Rob Reiner movie. But anyways, the fact that Nora Ephron, like, you know, she wrote romantic comedies, not chick flicks necessarily. I wouldn't consider any Nora Ephron movie a quote unquote chick flick. Those are romantic comedies. She was an amazing screenwriter. But, you know, her life story was a kind of a Lifetime Movie Network.
Yeah. But I mean, you're right.
You were a connoisseur of, chicken.
Well, she was married to Carl Bernstein, and he cheated on her.
All right, hold on. We're not talking about her life. We're talking about her movies. Okay, it's all right. But, you know, yeah, When Harry Met Sally and You Got Mail are great movies.
Yeah, I never saw When Harry Met Sally.
Well, guess
who's coming this week that we're going to have to watch
make
When Harry
sit him down
Sally
now. To watch.
And
I
did see You've Got Mail, but I will admit I was dragged to that. But I have been dragged to movies by women. And then I liked them. Like, I remember I was dragged to Jerry Maguire, and I really liked it.
Yeah, and Andrea got me to watch, A Star Is Born. I thought it was fantastic. I thought it was right. Terrific.
There's a couple of movies where that's happened, and then there are other ones that I was like, Yeah, I'm
like
sorry.
Beaches. I have no interest. I watched like half of it. I said, okay, I'm done.
I've never watched Beaches, Fried Green Tomatoes.
No, I've never watched Fried Green Tomatoes either. Yeah, I've never even watched Steel Magnolias because I know
Steel
it's just.
Magnolias is amazing.
Of course
but, you
it
know,
is.
We
to
had
you.
Like, you know, Porky's.
Yeah. And see, Fast Times at Ridgemont
side.
High.
That's.
You know. Yeah, but I mean, like, okay, so here's like here's a quintessential guy movie is something like
stop.
No, hold on a second. Let me finish. Quintessential guy movie is something like, you know, Deliverance. Yeah, I don't know really any women who sit there and say that they really loved watching Deliverance. Mm-hmm. But for men, it's kind of like, you know, The Hunt and all this other kind of stuff.
I honestly feel that way about The Shawshank Redemption a little bit, too. I don't feel like women love that movie nearly as much as men do.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so now that I can, so I will go back to the setup that I was trying to give you, Jay, and say that that was the next point in one of the tweets that the Netflix film account was talking about. That they claimed, and I'm assuming it's a woman, but the way that it was written, but she said that there are no male, you know, there are no man movies. There absolutely are. No Country for Old Men, Deliverance, which I've never seen, but I'll take your word for it. Even you know, some movies like...
Oh,
like,
Andrea. You know, there is a great male anal rape scene in that movie.
Yeah, well, so. Again, like...
Make him squeal like a
sense,
pig.
Yeah, I mean, Shawshank Redemption is not a movie that I'm going to watch more than once on my own. You know, I just wouldn't. Not that I'm, I mean, yeah, I kind of.
But what I think people make the mistake of thinking that, like, they'll refer to action movies as guy movies, but women love action movies, too.
Well, it depends.
It's a specific type of movie that qualifies as, like, a guy movie. And I think Shawshank Redemption, Deliverance, and a couple of others, they fall into that category. I don't know many women who like Fight Club.
No. What about what about Heat with De Niro and Pacino?
God. One of the that movie.
No. Jeez. I mean that is a guy movie. Same with as much as I liked the first Sicario movie, the second Sicario movie, those were movies that I would not watch more than once, whereas Jay would watch them multiple times. And there's a lot of movies that he does that with that I would never want to watch more than once. Now, any kind of legal thriller, like A Few Good Men, that's been my favorite movie since I was about 12 years old. So, I mean, you know, things like that, those are movies that both men and women enjoy.
What about Scarface?
I think I've seen it once. Again, that's a movie that I would watch once because, you know, Jay or somebody want, or a guy,
right, which is kind of the dynamic. Like I've only seen 50 First Dates one time. I've only seen How to Lose a Guy in 7 Days one time. You know, like these are all movies I saw one time, and then ex-girlfriends, whoever it was that made me watch it. You know, I remember there was a, when I was working at Chili's when I was like in my early 20s, me and this guy, Tim, at work, we would complain to each other every week because both of our girlfriends made us watch 90210 and it would just drive us nuts. And then one day after I don't know how long that we've been doing it, one day his girlfriend and my girlfriend noticed that he and I were discussing the previous episode without them. We're just like, I just can't believe Brandon did that. I just can't believe
it. Well, here's something interesting. This goes back to the 80s. It's like, you know what basketball players love to watch in the 80s? Soap operas.
Really? Why?
Because of the schedule. Most of the games are always at night. And so basically they had nothing to do from the morning when they got up until like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So, you know, Charles Barkley was the one who said, Charles Barkley was like, yeah, we watch soap operas all day, man. We talk about it and stuff. It's like they went around, they were talking to different. Oh yeah, I watch All My Children. I watch General Hospital. I watch, you know, it was crazy.
You know, it's a good point though, because that's one of the defining differences between movies and television shows, especially television shows that aren't formulaic, but rather continue to follow one narrative like soap operas do and 24 did and,
right,
you know, a lot of the other shows, is that you can get addicted to just about anything. Like, I've only watched 2 reality shows in my life, but I watched every week for those 2 that I did watch. And I didn't want to watch them.
Yeah.
But by week three, you're just like, well, I got to know if Joe picks Suzanne. I have to know, you know, and I feel like, you know, not to go off on a tangent, but that's why the MCU is so popular, is that they tapped into that.
Right.
Like that, the idea of a television show, but in the theaters.
Right. Well, and and I agree. And plus the difference between now and the 80s, of course, is now you have on-demand programming. You can watch whatever the hell you want, whenever you want. So, that, you know, back then you were limited. You know, it's like, yeah, they have maybe if the hotel they're staying at has HBO. But, I mean, I've learned that. I mean, you know, Andrew was the one who's a big fan of Investigation Discovery. And she used to tell me how she was watching ID Channel all the time. And then I started watching some of this stuff. And, like, I got hooked on some of these shows. And there's one called Homicide.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying Homicide City is this one where it takes place. The cases are from, like, Philadelphia from, like, 20 to 30 years ago. And it's fascinating.
One of the funniest things, because I used to listen to Rush Limbaugh, like, religiously. And I remember one time he was joking about how a fan had sent him like a bunch of gifts, and one of them was like the first four seasons of Grey's Anatomy. And he was just cracking up, like, I'm gonna watch Grey's Anatomy. And then it never mentions it again. And then like 6 months later, he says something about Grey's Anatomy. And then I guess he caught himself and he was just like, I watch that now. Somebody sent that to me. And it's like, you can get into anything. If you commit the time, you'll get into it. You know?
Yeah. 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 It's pretty, and there's so much stuff to watch now. It's like people sit there and have you seen this? And I'm like, God, I don't have enough time to watch all of that stuff. So I'm kind of like
too busy catching up on 5 years of ID Channel.
That's right. We need some Joe Kenda episodes.
Social media has ruined me. Like, there's certain shows I can watch, like new shows. Every once in a while, I can watch a new show or a movie, but it's really hard for me to commit because I've become addicted to, like, the YouTube format and just watching a 5-minute video or a 10-minute video. Like, I watch these What Culture videos on YouTube. I don't know if you've ever seen that channel.
No.
And it's just like listicles, you know, like the 10 best movie horror moments in movies and crap like that. And, like, that's what I watch while I'm eating lunch. And I've become so addicted to that, like 10 minutes into a show, I'm like, Jesus, can we move this thing along? Like, what's the resolution?
Well, like these ID shows, they set it up perfectly. I mean, they're very well done. They're kind of like these half like documentary, half drama things. And it's like they always set it up. They're like,
I've already made like 10 jokes about you two to other people.
It's funny. I'm telling you.
Somebody today, I was like, I can't. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna be getting out of here. There's only so much real life murder porn I can watch. You know.
Well, that's the thing that kills me is that she won't want to watch like violent movies, like a Pulp Fiction. Hey, it's too violent.
No, but I can't
watch death and murder shows. I mean, movies that make me nervous about going down the stairs to take the dog out, and I'm like, you know, because I'm waiting for some guy to be hiding around the corner. Meanwhile, I could watch a slasher movie every hour on the hour, and it wouldn't bother me.
My favorite thing about those is like the narrators or, you know, the hosts, they're always the same, and they're like, but Joanne didn't come back that night.
Oh, and it's no always, it's, before they go to a commercial, they're like, and what they saw next would chill them to the bone. Dun, 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 you know.
And don't forget, and there were signs.
Yeah, there's, yeah, there's.
But people noticed that Joe was acting differently.
Yeah.
And the reason why became evident the next day.
Yeah. They had no idea that their father was such a psychopath, but there were signs.
When he beat the cat to death and then cooked it.
Yeah. Well, there was one where the woman was like, my father just took this cat and just strangled it right in front of me and laughed. And she's like, I thought that was strange.
And she's like, that's our dad. Like,
yeah. You know, well, that's odd. How do you react to that? He just killed a kitten. That's a little weird.
Oh, no, but man. Like, it was funny. Like you two, it was just like you're watching Joe, Morning Joe, or murder porn.
Well, when you come visit this week, you won't see either of those. Maybe we'll just watch New Day with Allison Camerota and John Berman, and then maybe we'll watch something else in the evening.
You should do what I do. I'm so ridiculous. Like, if anybody saw my patterns, they'd be like, there's something wrong with you. Because I have, generally speaking, like four different inputs going at the same time. I have my laptop open, I have my iPad open, and I have my TV on.
Yeah.
And like, I'm doing all of them.
My
I just need like inputs at all times.
Yeah, I was watching the Masters on Sunday, and that's something we could talk about if anybody cares. My brother sends me a photo. He's got his TV up on the wall, and he's got his, like you, his computer and his iPad both like doing, like, I guess one was the golf channel, one was the actual thing, and the other one was like sport. I don't know what it was, but he was just like all golf all the time.
No.
So.
No, I don't want to talk about golf.
Why not?
Master, Tiger Woods won the Masters for the first time in 11 years. No, the day after,
first major.
Wait, you're telling me the best golfer of all time won?
For the first time in 11 years.
First major in 11 years.
Right, in a very strenuous sport.
It's a you know, and the funny thing was, is like Donald Trump said he was going to give Tiger Woods the Presidential Medal of Freedom. People were like, oh, what the hell? You know, I mean, I like Tiger Woods, but this is ridiculous. And I'm just like,
if Tiger accepts that, it means he supports racism.
But, you know, somebody did a meme of you know, Tiger during the Obama years was, you know, jailed Tiger.
Oh, yeah.
Getting divorced Tiger and beating the windshield with a golf club Tiger. And...
But the thing was about the Presidential Medal of Freedom is that it's not this thing that's given out to like here. Ellen DeGeneres got the Presidential Medal of Freedom. OK, I mean, you know, it's not this award. It's a distinguished award given to like politicians and athletes and movie stars and musicians and writers and everything like that. It's not like the Congressional Medal of Honor.
It's the American version of knighthood.
Yeah, and the president can give it to whoever he wants.
They do that, you know, everybody's a freaking knight.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, exactly. Yeah, do you really think
actually have to call them sir or whatever?
Do they lose knighthood when they become American citizens though?
No, American citizens can't. Well, they
can't. No. Let's say they were knighted when they were British, and they come and they become American citizens. They lose their knighthood.
No. I mean, they still are in Britain, but an American in America, your if you're knighted in England, you're that's not recognized in the U.S. No.
No, but
I
understand. If you're British and you're knighted, like people will call McCartney Sir Paul McCartney, you know, because he was knighted. But
yeah,
I'm
but the main thing for me is like you get to kill people.
Oh, is that what you get to do?
Yeah, it's one of the perks.
Oh, nice.
You'd know that if you watched Game of Thrones.
You know, see Elton John, see who he kills.
That's true.
And I will watch Game of Thrones. I wasn't going to sit there and get caught up with the crowd. I blaze my own path, which means I have to watch it illegally.
People that brag about not watching it on Twitter just blows my mind.
Oh,
I've never bragged about not watching it.
Every time it's on, people are like, I think I'm the only one that doesn't watch Game of Thrones. And it's like, oh, well, maybe that means a whole bunch of chicks will have sex with you now. What are you trying to prove? Like, going to go to a bar and pick up chicks? Hey there, I don't watch Game of Thrones
or The Walking Dead.
The thing about Game of Thrones, though, to me, it seems pretty, like, across the board, evenly split of women and men enjoying that show.
Well, the show really hasn't. Okay, so you know, if you watched it, the first two seasons were like the worst in terms of like the incestual sex and the, you know, just the, you know, the rampant sexual stuff and all that other kind of stuff. Like it was, since then it's gotten, you know, it's still extremely violent. Don't get me wrong.
The only show I've fast forwarded through the nudity. Like I'm like, this is a bit much.
Yeah, it's you know, there's some stuff. It was just kind of like whoa. But I mean, when you get through the later seasons, it becomes much more like, I guess, normal, what you want to say. I don't know if that's the correct word. But, you know, if you think every season is going to be like season one, then you're going to be, if that's what you want, you're going to be disappointed. If that's, yes. You know, so.
It was actually pretty clever if you think about it, because they sort of roped people in that maybe would not be the type to watch medieval fantasy with magic and things of that nature. They got them addicted to the characters, threw a bunch of sex in. There wasn't really any magic in the first couple of seasons. It just seemed like one of those political, you know, type shows, but in a medieval setting.
Right.
And then they were slowly like, oh, by the way, dragons. and wizards.
And wizards, you know? and you know, zombies and whatever else.
Zombies and giants. And and so, like, before you know it, all these people who probably always poo-pooed at Lord of the Rings and everything,
right,
are like, well, I think that a mage is going to come and set a spell. Like, they're all into it all of a sudden, so... I think that they've really broken open the genre.
Yeah, well, you know, they've attracted all the Dungeons and Dragons fans.
Right. And then, you know, and you've also got all of the people who read the books.
Right.
Are obnoxious about it. And it's pretty clear George R. R. Martin's going to die without ever finishing these things.
No.
So, I had started reading the books after the show went on a 2-year hiatus. I was like, you know, well, I guess I'll check them out because people always talk about them. And the more I understood how far behind he was on those last two books, I was like, yeah, I'm not doing this shit. Because he started writing this crap in 95. There have been people that have been reading this for 25 years waiting for him to finish. And he's just not going to do it.
It's like he's stringing them along.
Yes. I mean, he literally, they actually, the showrunners had a conversation with him to discuss how the series ends in case he dies.
Well,
theoretically, that's a question you would ask anyway if you're taking on a series that's not complete because somebody could die in a car wreck or something like that.
Right. Well, the writers have the authority? Don't they have, do they have the license to change stuff anyway like they do with The Walking Dead? Like, The Walking Dead, like, there's so many different things that happen on the show that didn't happen in the comic and vice versa.
Yeah, it seems to be the case that George R. R. Martin is more and more embracing that, actually. If I had to guess what he's doing is... He's still probably, as a writer, I know these feels. He still believes he's going to finish them. You know, like, he's still convinced. No, I'm totally getting to it. And I think he's embraced the idea that, this is very different. It's very different than what I'm going to write. Because if he doesn't do that, why are people going to buy the books?
That's true, too. I
think that's why. And then the other thing is, it really is a testament to how good of a writer he is that it is so obvious. Not that I don't still love the show, but it's so obvious when it went from his material to their take on his material. And the characters weren't as consistent. Littlefinger was not as consistent after we got past the part that George R. R. Martin had actually written.
Ah, okay.
You know, I mean, you look back at the first few seasons with Littlefinger, like, he is, he's not clever in the way the movies usually show it, where they're just promising he is. It really was surprising, like, how well he orchestrated things. And then in season 7, he thinks it's a great idea to try to pit the sisters against each other when their brother is like an all-seeing psychic. Like, how did he not see the danger in this situation? Right when he found out what Bran could do, he would have been like, that's great. I'm going back to the Vale because I'm kind of the reason your dad's dead.
Yeah, right. Oh, shit. All right, well, that's going to be the last word on this episode. Thank you, Andrew, for the news items.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and that's going to wrap up this episode of The Fifth Estate. And, Andrew, where can everybody find you?
On Twitter at Andrea N. Ruth, and on The Right Side Podcast on iTunes or at therightside.us. And also, you can subscribe to the weekly ARC digital newsletter because I curate that usually about once a week these days.
All right. Ben.
You can find me on Twitter at Ben Howe. And I got a book coming out in August.
Book's coming out in August. Yeah, we'll put a link there in the show notes so you can go out there and pre-order that bad boy.
Pre-order it.
Yes. All right, and I am Jay Caruso. You can find me at Jay Caruso on Twitter. I got a new piece out in The Independent talking about the folly of Bill Weld's challenge to Donald Trump in the GOP primary. And if you go to my, I'll put a link in there as well. I do a weekly newsletter every Monday. Called appropriately the Monday Notice, where it's just kind of random thoughts and political things and pop culture stuff. It's kind of fun. Sign up. It's free, and you won't get spammed the way Ben would spam you. So
yes, I would.
Yeah. All right. And so that's going to do it for this edition of the Fifth Estate. And remember, you know, go out there, you know, subscribe. We don't like to use the word subscribe. Sims don't use the word subscribe because you don't have to pay to get this podcast on your thing. Now, if you go to the, if you want the cool sexy sounds of Ben Howe's voice,
my voice,
premium content, then you go to,
yes,
there you go.
I'll use an actual microphone instead of my
Fifth Estate.
Oh, AirPods.
Excuse me, Fifth Estate dot. Now I forgot what it was. FifthEstate.supportingcast.fm, and you can sign up for the premium content. $3.99 a month. That's it. Cheaper than a cup of coffee.
Only 50 of those, and you can buy yourself a new set of AirPods, Jay.
I know. I lost my AirPods. I can't believe it. I feel like such a like peasant when I have to like take my wired earbuds out of my pocket when I'm getting on the bus to go to work, and I'm like untangling them, and there's a guy sitting next to me like laughing at me while he has his AirPods.
That?
I had to. I just can't run out and spend $150 on new AirPods.
You can basically survive anything now.
It's like I've been put to the ultimate test. I have to use wired earbuds. Ugh. It's like, ugh.
I don't even like hearing it described.
It's awful. It is awful. Yeah. It really is bad. It's like, you know, it gets caught in a button in your shirt. It's pulling out of you. Oh, it's terrible. I'd rather go around looking like I've got Q-tips sticking out of my ears.
Oh, I won't do it. I'll just be the asshole in public on speakerphone. I do not care.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a few of those on the bus, too. They think everybody wants to listen to their conversation.
Oh, it's not that I think anybody wants to listen. I know they don't, but I'm not putting up freaking wires in my ears. Are you out of your mind? There's no way. Even my Beats headphones are wireless. You know?
Oh, yeah.
So I'll be the guy sitting on the train being like, no, you didn't. Yeah, it's true. You know, whatever. Like, that's me.
It's Ben. All right. We'll see you next time here on the Fifth Estate.